I don't know, Keith, you don't know anything about it then.
Oh, what's this? Rabbi Stein, what is this? The predecessor? Okay. Might be much shorter than this, much smaller than this. Okay. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Gentlemen, topic for this series is marriage, or ishus. And there's so much to be said. You know, obviously, in a few short sessions, we can't discuss everything. But I felt we should make a beginning. As I understand, my mission is to sensitize the Talmidim to some of the issues they may face in Siddur Kiddushin, which is a rabbinical responsibility. How many are married in this room? Please raise your hand if you're married. Okay, so maybe a little less than 50-50. About 50-50. So I will begin by asking those who are married the following question. When you got married, did you and your wife meet with the Masada Kiddushin in a formal session before the wedding? Those who did, raise your hand. Those who did not, raise your hand. Okay. So most of you did. That's I guess, a good thing. My belief is that it's important for Masada Kiddushin, as part of his responsibility, to meet with the Chasam Kala before the wedding. Even though I'm fully aware of the fact that in other parts of our community, it's not done. It wasn't done when I got married. The Rav Zecher Tzadik Levracha was my Masada Kiddushin. I did not know for the fact that I took the Kala to meet him in Boston in the summertime before we got married. He wouldn't have never even seen the Kala before the wedding. And that was the style. That's probably to this day the style of what we call today Rosh Hashivas. And I don't mean that with any sense of disrespect. Rosh Hashivas are Rosh Hashivas. Ooh. But we should put a Rabbanim, who were traditionally the Masada Kiddushin. If you look in the simply in the Ramah, that was considered to be the province of the local Rav when there was such a conflict of a local Rav in town, and others were not even allowed to encroach upon his prerogative. There may have even certain financial perks associated with it, but so people who kind of walk around the title Rav as opposed to the title Rosh Yeshiva are much more likely to have meetings with their custom cows in advance. It's a fairly small sample. I'm not going to do it again, but in past speaking to larger groups, I asked them, those who raised their hands yes or no, who had the privilege of a Masada Kiddushin, the Rosh Yeshiva, and who had a Rav. And it was almost direct. Those who had a Rav did meet the Chosn Kala. Those who had a Rosh Yeshiva did not. It was almost, it wasn't 100%, but it was nearly direct. Is anyone in this room here an exception to that principle? Which way?
Rosenstrike was named Masada, and he did meet with us.
And he did meet with you. Good.
And Rabbi Wiener met with us.
Good. Good. Excellent. Okay, so I guess some of the why you were Shashivas are more enlightened, more progressive. Some of them actually even wear the title Rabbi, aside from Shashiva, though these two do not. So, whatever it may be. Fine. So, I believe that we should begin by discussing the topics that should be discussed by a Masada Kiddushin, whatever title he happens to have. And after that, we'll go into more detailed analysis. And perhaps for next week, if Rabbi Stein is wants, we can have like real Makoros. And I'll look at this over. This is wow. And I'll give you back mine. So it'll be a totally different. I better try to do it today, otherwise, it's not going to be a chance for production to finish it within a week. How long things take there. Okay, so when I meet with the Chosn Kala, when they ask me to be Masada Kiddushin, my first line to them is, perhaps you want a different Rav, or a different Rosh Yeshiva to be Masada Kiddushin. And the reason for this line is not humility, it's simply a response to what used to exist, and still does in certain circles, people fighting for the honor of being Masada Kiddushin. this rabbi wants it, this reshiva wants it, everyone wants this kibbutz, that kibbutz, the third kibbutz. You know, I don't want to be part of that. I Baruch Hashem, I'm still able to say that I don't need it. I don't know how long it's going to go on. I think it's Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz. It was my cousin, Rabbi Kalish. He said, Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz was once giving a shmuz in the Mir Yeshiva, and he said, you know, it said, when a person gets older, all the Yetzaharas get weaker. You have to enumerate what the average Yetzahara is that people have. They all get weaker. With one exception. That's the Yetzahara for covet. And he paused for effect and said, Un ich weiß. And I know, he's already an older man, he knows that the Yetzahara for covet. So I hope that I will never have such a Yetzahara to be a Masada Kedushin. And I'll explain to you reason, a good reason why I don't have it. So don't get my anivas. But there's another reason. But I think that there's so many people who fight for the honor of being Masada Kedushin. I say, leave me out of this. Every time I asked him, I said, you know, please feel free to call upon somebody else. Now, at the last minute, I think it's an important piece because otherwise people get caught in fights. They think that the Rebbe wants this, the Rebbe wants that. People have fought over kibbutz for me. Not Masada Kedushin. This happened. I was once at a wedding of a Talmud of mine from 40 years ago. And he's fighting that I should get the bracha achrita because he's his Rebbe. You know, and I'm a little bit older than the other candidate for the bracha achrita. I said, what are you, crazy? You're fighting that? I don't want this. I want this to be shalom. Very recently, I got a call from, I'm supposed to be, got the covet of Kriya Seksuba. It's considered that people think that's a big covet. It's famous in our yeshiva that somebody said that, yeah. Anyone can read the Ksuba. Anyone. I'm using the emphasis on the word one. It's not limited to, yeah. So it's a non-existent kibbutz, but in people's eyes, I read the Ksuba. It's what we call a speaking role. So I got a call up. I should come early for Kriya Seksuba, but then I got a call back. Somebody else wants the kibbutz. Is it okay if you get, he did me the two favors. One, I was able to come an hour later. And two, he gave me the biggest kibbutz of all. What's the biggest kibbutz of the wedding? What is it?
A kiddushin,
absolutely. The biggest kibbutz of all by far, by a long shot. Masada, you don't need a masada. You don't need a ksuba. You need nothing. You need two kosher eidim. That's what you need. So I'm just about, it was brought to my attention that somebody, you know, wasn't happy with, presumably, with that kibbutz. He had to have a speaking role. People are people. You know, the human condition is the human condition. That's why I think we should always try to step aside and let someone else have whatever kibbutz they want. Fine. That's number one. The first thing before you start. The other reason, I'll give it away right now, is that I am what I call a maximalist Masada Kedushin. There are minimalists and there are maximalists. The minimalists, they get up and they say the bracha and they sit down. That's it. They view that as their entire role. I've been at weddings. Hush of a Masada Kedushin, they're hardly there for the Kedushin. And then they just sit down, and things go, run. Even under the chuppah, things are going on, they're not even there. I'm a maximalist. And being a maximalist, what this means is if I'm a Masada Kedushin, I try to come on time. I know, whatever, however you define that. You know, bidiyuk. You know, it's a sheish bidiyuk. They say in Yiddish, bidiyuk means sense, biz di yidin velen kumen. You know, that's bidiyuk. But still, I try to be on time. I shouldn't get nervous where I am. And I also try to stay till the end, which is the end by me is the Sheva Brachos. So if I'm a Masada Kedushin, it takes a lot of time. If I'm not a Masada Kedushin, I come when I want, and an hour later, leave an hour earlier. I save 2 hours like this. So I'm very happy not to be a Masada Kedushin. That's an aside. But okay, start with that. The first responsibility of any officiating rabbi, the Masada Kedushin, is to know, is the marriage permissible? As I always say, I'm being the maximalist that I am, I believe that that's the responsibility of the Masada Kedushin, to the exclusion of everybody else. Which means, what kind of question is that? The person's been in shul his whole life, no one ever said anything, he's been in Jewish schools his whole life, no one said anything, it must be, there's no problem. Ain't necessarily so. I know many cases just gets pushed and pushed and pushed, and no one takes ownership, no one takes responsibility. In my view, they may even be correct. The responsibility lies with the Masada Kedushin. That's where the buck stops. And the buck stops there. He has to find out to make sure that the parties are eligible to marry one another. I do concede that the question has to be much more thorough if the family is or was not observant. In other words, if, as far as we know, the family was observant straight through, then there's much less of a responsibility to check up, because there are certain kinds of chazakas, presumptions. On the other hand, if the chassan or kala, or their parents, or their grandparents, someone we know in history, you don't go that many generations back, were not observant, then those chazakas are dramatically weakened. Because in a non-observant world, anything goes, as we well know. Okay, just want to give you that kind of a background. So I asked the following questions to a chassan and kala. As far back as you know in the family history, have there been any? I ask this word, is a very difficult word to ask, but I ask it. Conversions. And a subset of conversions is, at least recently, adoptions. Because many, if not most, adoptions these days, since the pill, and there aren't that many Jewish children available for adoption anymore, are very often conversions as well of non-Jewish children upon birth. And if the answer is yes, my view is that it's the Masada Kedusha's responsibility to check up and see that the conversion and or adoption conversion are kehalacha. That may seem very easy, but it's not so easy. Not so easy at all. And the reason you may think it's easy is because, what's the problem? Just find out if the rabbi who can perform the conversion was Orthodox, conservative, or Reform. If it's Orthodox, it's certainly good. If it's Reform, it's certainly no good. Conservative, depends who you ask. If you ask Rav Moshe, it's certainly no good. If you ask my Rebbe, maybe it'd possibly be good in certain circumstances. But if it's Orthodox, that's a slam dunk. That's what the people see in the street. And I'm here to unfortunately, to tell you the bad news that it's not true. Not true. At least in my opinion, it's not true. Many, forgive me for saying it, most conversions done by Orthodox rabbis are suspect. For a very simple reason. Most of them are done for the sake of marriage, in the case of adults, and in the case of children, many, and in some old years most, were done even though the family would not show me mitzvahs kadasa gedin. In the latter case, of the geiris, which is done when the parents are not observant, it's a big dispute among the poskim. Is that conversion valid? Many of you learn Ksubas. Who learned Ksubas last year? Another question. Who learned Ksubas last year? Raise your hand. That's it. Not even half. That's bad news. I assume everyone knew Ksubas. I will have to maybe put some more Gemaras and the Makaris in there. Okay? So you know, the Gemaras in Afid Aleph, that Ger Kot might be also that's bad. And Zach and Lash Labafanov. The Schus. Is it a Schus to be brought into Klal Yisrael if your parents aren't observant? That's the crux of the issue. Some say, yes, it's better to be a non-from Jew than to be a non-Jew. Even if you're a non-Jew, presumably who's keeping, let's say, the basics of Sheva Mitzvahs. And others say, no. If you're keeping the Sheva Mitzvahs, you're a Hasidim Masolam, it's great. If you become Jewish and you're not keeping 606 Mitzvahs, so it's a net loss. Very, very complex question. Very complex. I do not believe that anyone can say definitively that he's right, one way or the other. For example, Rabbi Yoshev Zatzal, who was known as a very decisive posek, said, it's a suffix. It's a doubt, because you can't, it's too hard to decide. So I'm holding on to his kapata. I think it's too hard to decide, even though my natir is that it's no good. That's how it seems to be the majority of you, I believe, in poskim. But if Rabbi Yashiv isn't sure, I certainly wouldn't sell my chametz to such an individual who went through such a conversion. On the other hand, I wouldn't marry such a person. So if it's a conversion, adoption, a non-Orthodox parents, and they want me to be Masada Kedushin, sorry to say, if you want me, you don't have to. I keep saying, go to someone else. But if you want me, there has to be a new Giyur L'Chumrah. That's a case where there's a adoption aversion. Adoption, conversion at birth, when the parents are not observant. What about the case of a conversion of someone who is not observant? Now, that may be the chosm kala, him or herself, More likely, in case that you're dealing with, it's the parent or even the grandparent. And of course, we're speaking primarily about the maternal line, right? There can be cases of very distinguished rabbis in the 40s, 1940s, were doing conversions routinely for families who were not Shomer Mitzvahs. And they weren't hiding it. They just did it. And the reason they perhaps they did it is because the alternative would be they go to a conservative rabbi. These are realities of the 1940s, 50s, 60s. So you and I would say, how irresponsible to do such a thing. Because you're going to make a convert who's not observant, a convert who's not a Kabbalah mitzvah on a simple level, the conversion is no good. We're not learning Hichas Giyur. I think someone else is going to do it later, but I'll give you my take on it. There are numerous tshuvas and Rav Moshe about it. They seem to be almost contradictory. The bottom line of what I think, and those who want to look it up could look it up in Beis Yitzchak from a few years ago, we looked at Yavamis, is that if the Geirus is completely insincere and no change at all exists between pre-conversion and after conversion, that Geirus is nothing. Rav Moshe says it's nothing with nothing. His father said it was nothing, and it's obviously nothing. No Kabbalah mitzvahs is absolutely zero. On the other hand, if there is a change between the pre-conversion and the post-conversion, that there is an acceptance of some mitzvahs, even though it's not complete and perfect, Rav Moshe seems to be of the view that it may be considered a conversion. Likely not, but perhaps yes. And on that basis, Rav Moshe himself, this is print the tshuva, was writing to a rabbi, I believe, in Ohio, look it up in the tshuvas, who was stuck in a situation where, if he wouldn't do it, he'd go to a conservative rabbi. And my understanding is that Rav Moshe was assuming, if they go to a conservative rabbi for the conversion, which he thought was 100% no good, because the rabbi was no good, nonetheless, they would intermarry within the Jewish people. So I believe Rav Moshe felt that the lesser of the two evils is that the Orthodox rabbi should do the conversion, even though he writes in that same Shiva, tell B'nai Torah not to marry him. That's a very hard psak, tell B'nai Torah. He's walking around with a piece of paper with your name on it, and in 50 years from now, the grandchild will tell B'nai Torah they should stay away. That's the upshot of Rav Moshe's psak. So Rav Moshe is a God of Adar. We can't quibble. That's what he said. If he came to me, I would say, Ani Akotin, don't do it. Don't do the conversion. They'll go conservative, then go conservative. You know, and in a certain way, it's better. It should be black or white instead of gray. Because if it's black and not white, so then not just B'nai Torah should stay away. Everyone stay away. Once it becomes gray, you tell B'nai Torah to stay away. Down the road, there's going to be a Ben Torah who's not going to know about this, and he's not going to stay away. So it caused a michshol in a certain sense. We are not here. Rav Moshe was talking at different times, different places. But that's what's printed in the tshuva. So in my opinion, if you find out that the conversion is not 100%, again, for one of two reasons, it's an adoption conversion, the parents are on frum, or it's a regular conversion, but there was not acceptance of the basic mitzvahs. And again, I'm a makel, in the sense that they don't keep every last nekuda. They keep Shabbos, they keep kashrus, the basic stuff are being kept. In my view, we can assume it's a good conversion. But in so many of the cases, I would say a majority, they're not even keeping Shabbos and kashrus. Unfortunately, then you have to say, sorry, if I'm going to have to have a gil, we call it a gil l'chumra. So that's, to me, a very major issue that Mesadik Kedushin have to face. It's uncomfortable, very uncomfortable. People scream at you, yell at you, what are you telling me? I'm assuming I'm Jewish, my father's from Jewish. Yeah, but your grandmother, you know, what are you telling me stories from 50, 60 years ago from your grandmother? But that's a responsibility of a Rav to ask. Now, there may be rabbis who are more suspicious than I am, and they'll insist on, shtel yuchsin. I'm not so insistent. I just asked this chassid kal, I hope they tell the truth. Tell you a story in a minute. The next question is, which is the stakes are leaving a little bit higher, are there any divorces going back in the family? You obviously understand why. Who, what? What I mean is, was there a divorce of a mother? Again, the mother's line is most critical. And then she, you are, or your father or mother is a product of a second marriage. Then you understand what the problem is. Chas v'chalila, if there was a proper marriage and not a proper get, and the child is born to a second marriage, you don't want to even say the word. And we really don't want to get involved in those kinds of cases. That's a very serious problem. But it's the responsibility of the Masada Kedushin to ask that question. You have an achrayus. It's an achrayus. You can't just make assumptions. You have to have responsibility. Now, okay, great story. So as to what this is, it's a very interesting story. The story goes back, I'd say, more than 20 years. Rabbi Adler Shlita, the Rosh Hashiva and Aryeh Yeshiva, said he had a case somewhere, someone living down all the way downtown. He said someone was connected there, where there's an unusual case where there's a woman who became totally observant, and she's living with a Jewish man who's totally non-observant, and she wants to convert. So, what? How can that be? What kind of crazy marriage is this? No. She wants to convert and get married. Not only that, but she's already pregnant, and she wants to make sure that she converts and gets married before she gives birth. Okay, after being persuaded by Rabbi Adler, another rabbi downtown, said, oh, let them come and see me. They come and see me, and yeah, she comes, you know, obviously very, very pregnant, but very well, you know, dressed properly, tznius, and she keeps Shabbos, and she keeps kashrus and everything. Said, be your husband, or your boyfriend, doesn't keep these things. Yeah, I know, but I keep it. So now that's now that we have a thing called the GPS, it's against the rules to do such a conversion. This is long before any official rules existed, and since the two rabbonim, Rabbi Adler and the rabbi from downtown, both vouched for her being a totally observant woman, I said, okay. So I start talking to them a little bit. I asked a couple of questions. I say to the fellow, tell me, any adoptions, conversions, or divorces in your family as far as back as you know? He says, no. She says to him, Mickey, that's not true. I don't know what his name is Mickey. Mickey, that's not true. And no, she was a Fruma. And I don't know if you lied or just forgot, his grandmother, living in Budapest, somewhere right after World War I, had been married first, and then the mother comes from, someone comes from that second marriage. So I hit the panic button. I panicked completely. Why did I panic? You have to know a little Jewish history. Rabbi has to be a little Jewish historian also, a little bit. Well, not self together a PhD, but a little bit. Those who don't know that before World War I, most Jews were still living in the Shtetlach, and they were, at least, you know, outwardly observant. So it's a very strong likelihood that the first marriage took place in the shtetl by an Orthodox rabbi. During World War I, many, many, many were displaced and ended up in the big cities, living, unfortunately, bohemian lifestyles. And the very good chance that the second marriage was not a halachic marriage, maybe it may not have been a get, and maybe this Mickey, and I don't want to say the word, it's not kosher of a bakal. That's why I hit the panic button. I said, I'm sorry, I just can't do this. So Rabbi Adler starts arguing with me. Make a tasty. What are you making a reyus for? You don't know if there was a marriage. And you don't know if there was a marriage, but it was a divorce. A sex maker. I said to him, yeah, okay, you can do it. I'm not doing it. I don't get involved in this kind of situation. You have to go higher. I can't just decide on myself to not do this. I said, okay, I'll try to get a hold of Rabbi Yoshev. So I sent my son to Rabbi Morgenstern, who was the Rabbi Yoshev's main assistant. And a main American assistant, I should say. And I asked him to find out. And Rabbi Yoshev sent back to my son, do the conversion. I said, is the child going to, but if, is there going to be a possible mamzeres? That he didn't answer that question. You know, that's typical Rabbi Yoshev style. Just do the wedding and worry about it later. I refused. I did not listen to the God of Lador. I said, I'm not doing a wedding. It's going to be, I'm going to cause mamzeres. Because remember, if I don't do the conversion, there's no wedding, so the kids will be, the woman, she's pregnant with the baby. That baby's going to be, by definition, not no mamzeres problems over there, right? Because it was harasa shalom b'kedusha. It was a Yisrael Shabbat al hanochris. There's no possibility of mamzeres. And if I don't do the conversion, I'll have more children. So zayin hazayin. At the end of the day, when she becomes after her children, she wants to convert and have the children convert. Again, there's no problem of mamzeres. Rabbi Yosef, knowing him, strict constructionist, but right out of living in sin, I wouldn't listen. So Rav Adler Shlita has an uncle who is one of the Gedolei Hador Mamish. His name is Rav Chaim Symbolist. He's a Mamish Gedolei Hador. He's a Dayan in Tel Aviv all the years that I had to do with him in terms of prenups, which we'll be discussing with Hashem in the series. This series can go by way 100 shirim. I mean, I'm going to listen to 6 shirim once we get started talking, you know. But, so he said, my uncle said it's okay. So okay, let's call your uncle. So, this isn't even part of the story. I looked in the, this is 20 years ago, after the Iron Curtain fell, I checked up the records in Budapest. Yes! I wasn't lazy. I looked for this name and see if they had, if the rabbinate in Budapest, Orthodox rabbinate, had performed the second wedding. I have no problem. I have no question. Beidina basa beidina lo dakia. I have no questions about it. But there was no such record. That made my suspicions even worse. Did they have the gittin? No, they don't have no gittin files. That there's somebody that couldn't find those. Whatever. Anyway, so they put it on the phone up a simple list. Lamata machzik reuta ma. Harab muchan lechtov li she'en she'shlat mamzerut. He's demurring. Finally, his nephew got him to say yes. Okay. Harab muchan lechtov li mechtav. Ken. I didn't wait to get the mechtav. Right away, I called up the lady. Come today for to the conversion. Can't make it. Come there. P.S. The baby was born. I was in time. The baby was born, so we had to have a conversion after the baby, for the mother and for the child. Then we had to have a wedding. I think I took some chevra from the yeshiva, went to the pizza shop for a shevra brachas. You know, that was my story. So I'm just giving you an idea that when you ask with any divorces, you have to hope they're telling you the truth. He was not telling the truth. Mickey, it's not true. So so there are those who have greater suspicions than others, and you have to know, you have to use your Eile Dayan Masha and Avros. These days, you have to be a little careful. You know, this is for the younger set. There are now, the fact that a child is born to a couple, you're not 100% sure that the child belongs to the couple. There's so many different kinds of what we call today artificial procreation. Maybe that's really also, I guess, part of our topic. I'm not going to talk about everything. There's IVF, and there's some of the IVF is from a donor egg, and a donor egg, that child is also very likely not Jewish. It's Bachleikis, but Rabbi Yosef held, and I thought that way also, that the child is not Jewish coming from a donor egg. And there are all kinds of other possible issues, if there's a donor sperm, all kinds of things. Now, of course, not everybody knows even that where they're coming from. They don't know, you don't know. But some people do know, so I don't ask the question, but as the years go by, when you'll be doing weddings later on, maybe time to ask the question, because it'll become a mere tamatzi instead of an enamatzi, which it is right now. Fine. So far, so good. These are basic questions to know if you're able to do the wedding. Yes, sir.
If they don't cooperate with these questions, do you say, I'm sorry, I did good?
Well, they don't cooperate. They're not going to answer you.
I'm saying if they answer, but like you tell them like something's wrong, and then they're like, what, our conversion's good? What are you telling me?
Go ahead. Go to someone else, that's all. I don't trying to impose myself and to hurt their feelings. They want to assume that their conversion was Jewish, the conversion was valid, even though the parents weren't Shomer Shabbos, or even though their grandmother who was converted was not from. That's their right. I'm not saying that. Again, I'm in a position where I can say no. Someone's parents is out in somewhere in the world. He can't say no. That's a bit more complicated. So every situation is, yes, sir.
With regard to your story, Gersh Latimar married Mamzer, right?
Right.
So the problem would be future children.
Exactly. It's correct. That's probably part of Rabbi Yosef's cheshbon. What's wrong? It's a permissible marriage. Yeah, but then the children of Mamzer, I'm not until you write me a letter. I got the letter, by the way. Rabbi Simba sent me the letter that he thinks that there's no room to be cheshish. Yeah?
Back to the adoption. How observant do they have to be?
In my opinion, yeah. Shomer Shabbos and Kashmir. In certain parts of the world, they made a deal that as long as they send their kids to school, they agree to send their kids to a day school or a high school for 12 years, that's good enough.
So,
that's what he's quoted as saying. What he said, I don't know. To which I responded to someone who grilled me on it. Said, let's do a survey. I'm willing to concede to you. Do a survey of all those individuals who were converted and went to Jewish day school for 12 years, whose parents weren't from. Okay? So until age 17, they're being going to Jewish schools. Okay? Come 8 years later, at 25, and see how many of them are Shomer Shabbos and Kashrus. If it's more than 50%, I agree. If you think I'm wrong, let me know. Who thinks I'm wrong? Okay, so therefore, I can't agree. I mean, the facts are the facts. The facts are the facts. Okay, right. Good. This is all if the husband is a Yisrael. Today, we have great problems with people who are Kohan. Who's a Kohan in this room? Okay. Baruch Hashem. The Kiddush, though. We have tremendous respect for you. But if you have a Masada Kiddushin, you make tremendous additional challenges based on Pesukim and Chumash. We all know that Kohen may not marry a divorced woman. Everyone knows that, the Pesukim and Chumash. He also may not marry a woman who is a Gioris. That's not so well known. But Mefurish and the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, it's black and white. No one's denying that. Not only that, even if the mother converted while she was pregnant, and the girl is born subsequently, Beis Shmuel Paskins, even that, based upon the Rambam, even that is not allowed for the Kohen to marry. I had that in my own family. I have some Kohanim in my family. I was going on seriously with a girl whose mother converted, you know, while she was pregnant with her, and I said, sorry. Break it up. It's not easy being a Kohen. You almost make a new bracha shaloh on the Kohen. You know, the old days, Mela, you know, you got Sir Kohen, you did Avodah Beis HaMikdash, and you got Truma, and you got some of the perks. So, you get the first Aliyah, okay? You get Duchen a few times a year, okay? A little, but that's about it. I mean, there's so many restrictions, there are marriage restrictions and Tumah restrictions. It's not so easy being a Kohen these days. Anyway, and then, of course, the most sensitive of all, the woman lived with a non-Jewish man. That's really, really getting personal. That's, it can't get much more personal than that. How can you top that? So you say, okay. So the rabbi gets up and says, excuse me, dear Kala. Okay, so my view on this matter is as follows. If the Kala is what we call today FFB, my view is that Noshua Becheskas Kashus. I know not everyone agrees with me, but I'm a charitable sort. I assume that the miut that are unfortunately not so kosher and are not so kosher squared, not just that they had a boyfriend, they had a non-Jewish boyfriend, is Eino Matsui, and there's no Chiv Du B'dik on it. So the average I've married off Baruch Hashem many Kohanim, don't have to ask the question. However, if the young lady is a Balas Tshuva, it's a very serious problem. A very serious problem. Rebbe Yosef is quoted as saying, a Kohen is not permitted to marry a Balas Tshuva. Stop. Full stop. I'm talking about a Balas Tshuva over a certain age. Now she's become a Balas Tshuva in the single digits. But let's put it this way in our terms. She spent 4 years on a university campus. You can go on your computer right now and find out what percentage of those individuals of virgin brides after the age of 22 or so when they graduate. You'll have to take a microscope to find the number. That's the culture. I'm not telling you. Is anyone denying that fact? I like when people say I'm wrong. I don't want yes men. Who thinks I'm wrong? That there are large percentages of women. And I'm talking about the outside world, not from. Just, you know, it's just the reality. Again, I'm a trusting person. If the individual say to me, but not me, I'm from the minority, I would be willing to accept it. You know, So I'd be willing if they're chosen, you know, suspicious, huh? Go to a doctor. Go to a doctor. The doctor says that this woman is a psula. You know, we have this week's parsha. Psula v'ish lo yada'ah. You ever know what Rashi says there? No? Chumash and Rashi, you have to know. So the Sula Kedarka, Ishla Yodah Shalo Kedarka. So that is, you know, And by the way, if you think that there's no crazy man in the world to ever do such a thing, you are wrong. You are wrong. Because we have to find out when you, I guess it's the most basic question to ask, although it's not in my list, because was this woman herself ever married before? It's all about divorces. Forget her mother, her grandma. She! Maybe she was married before. Can't marry someone who's already married to somebody else. Can't do that. And, you know, there's a big machlokes of Rav Moshe and Rav Henkin. If they live together without official city kedushin, do you have to have a get or not? Rav Moshe says no, and Rav Henkin says yes. Even Rav Moshe agrees, whenever you can, you should try to find to get a get. And we always try to do that whenever there was anyone living together in any way that could be viewed as some kind of husband-wife or, you know, type of relationship, and it's hard to know. And in one of the cases which we dealt with, believe it or not, I mean, I'm telling you, experience. So you think you've heard everything? We had a case where there's a guy and a woman came to a kala teacher. She wasn't even engaged yet. She was in shidduchim and said, you know, she had a relationship with some fellow, and now she's afraid. Maybe she needs a get before, you know, going into shidduchim. So we called the guy in, and the guy says, "Yeah, no, there was," in his words, repeatedly. Although at first he's been it once, whatever. Bia shaloka darka. Yeah. But Rashi quotes that they would show me pesachem, but they would mafkir this house on shaloka darka. Rashi is expression. Yeah, we had it. And it turned out that this young man and woman even went somewhere. I can't give away anything confidential. They went somewhere repeatedly presenting themselves as man and wife in a community where they were Jewish people. So I'm not saying they're married. Chalila v'chas say they're married, but I said, just to play it safe, give her a get. He didn't want to do it because he didn't accept that this is true. If ever get was ever given, I don't know. But I'm just telling you, if you think that these things are never happened, they can happen. Yes?
Quick question. If, let's say the Balas Chuba said, let's say she says she had beer but only with the Jews. Do you believe her or only if she says she never had
beer? I would believe her, because I'm kind of a trusting fellow. I would believe her. Of course, yeah, Jews. How does she know he's Jewish? His name is Goldstein. Yeah, his name is Goldstein, but his mother's not Jewish. So you have to be careful. I don't want to make too many chashashes, but you have to be careful. Yeah.
The Kohen is a daughter.
The Kohen what?
Kohen's parents were Baal Yeshuva. The Kohen's mother is Baal
Yeshuva. So that's what everyone is saying. That by the time you get into the field, the problem's going to be solved. Why? The biggest problem is the Kohen Baal Yeshuva. Who's he going to marry? He's a Baal Yeshuva. He's the Rebbe Yashas. He's not going to marry Baal Yeshuva. So what's going to happen? Ah. But a few years from now, already starting now, where was his mother? Was she 4 years on the university campus? You know, in more recent decades, when this is not just 2015 when it started. It started 30 years ago, 40. I don't know when all this kind of promiscuity on college campuses started. I mean, it already started in the 60s when that's when I was in college. So make love, not war. That was the hippie. That's what went on in those days. So again, I don't know exactly where to draw the line, but there are many situations in which the kohen is not a kohen. He's a chol, because his mother was not. Now, of course, that can, in this case, in a sense, be a help, because if he's not a kohen, then he has none of the restrictions that we spoke about earlier. Now, we've had such cases too. Sometimes what goes on in the world today. A kohen wants to marry a grusha, they try to find ways how to do it. Two ways. Either they de-kohenize him, and that actually can work in certain circumstances, you know, where the mother, if it's really true, can just make it up, right? Or they cancel the wedding of her. Those are both highly suspect when they're done under the gun, you know. First he meets the girl, and then they find me ahead, the rabbi. These are current events. I'm not discussing past tense. Current events. Some of the community that some of you may even hail from without me going into any details. I recently wrote about this, but no more said than that. Okay, fine. So these are serious problems. Okay. I'm going on to my questioning. Well, the next question, in my view, is genetic testing. I'm a believer in genetic testing. Now, there are two ways to do this. One way is Dor Yesharim, which is a heroic organization by Rabbi Eckstein, who never suffered the loss of many Tay-Sachs children. Anyone else to suffer that way? So there are system which you probably know about, that they test boys and girls when they're young. Girls are tested as a rule these days when they're finishing high school. Boys, it's much more hit and miss. And then when they're a marriageable age, at some stage or other, now they're different, which part of the universe they come from. In certain parts, before they even meet each other, before they even talk about it, we hear the numbers, give the numbers in, called Dor Yesharim, see they're compatible. They don't have any of the, they're testing about 9 diseases, Tay-Sachs being, of course, the most prominent, but they extended it, where it's the children are chalila b'chas, terribly affected. And if the Dor Yesharim says yes, they go out. The Dor Yesharim says no, they don't go out. They don't tell you what. You know that both of you have at least one of the 9. And if you want to find out later, you can find out later to do a separate test. That's how Dor Yesharim works. The impetus behind their system is that people are going to be traumatized if they find out that they're carrying something. I both say everyone's carrying something. But in certain parts of the community where they're not so, forgive the expression, Torah matter oriented, the stigma and the trauma, so they just don't tell them anything. Obviously, if Dor Yesharim says no, that means they know they have something. But they won't even know because the parents give it in. But the kids are considered to be too fragile. The parents give in the numbers, it comes back, no, they don't tell their son or daughter you have some. Go weiter, keep giving more numbers, until you find some of it, the numbers match. A shidduch mazel tov. So that's how Dor Yesharim works. In our parts of the world, I'm a little bit more of a fan of what we call today open testing, where they people are man enough, a woman enough to face up to their genetic reality. But once again, I don't insist on that, but something, either Dor Yesharim or the open testing. And the open testing now tests for many more things. Some have disputed whether they should be tested or not. They also test for dominant, which Dor Yesharim would never do. Dor Yesharim is only testing for recessive. That means it's only a problem if both of them carry it. Since they have a solution, they say no, so they raise the issue. But if it's dominant, we have no solution, so we won't get into that. Of course, that's even a much greater problem for those who know a little bit of biology. It's a problem. Now, I know that today there are those who will say, what's the problem? Let them get married and just do IVF PGD. Everyone knows what that stands for? No. IVF, everyone knows, right? In vitro fertilization, that's already a word. PGD is pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, something like that, where they will be able to take the 8 cells that are very, very in the lab right after the fertilization and take one cell out and put it under a microscope, and they'll be able to know if it carries that deadly gene or not. This way, so let them get married. Who cares? They both have Tay-Sachs. The problem's been solved, not just a Dor Yesharim way, a different way. I very, very strongly discourage such activity. Very strongly discourage it. This is what we call a b'diavad situation. In other words, a couple's already married, they don't know it, and then they find out that they're both carrying Tay-Sachs or something terrible like that. That's what they should do. But the chatchila, one should not put himself or herself into such a situation for a whole variety of reasons. Number one, there are halachic issues with IVF. Number two, that means that the couple has to be on birth control the whole life, and their intimacy and their procreation are completely separated from one another. Yeah. That's a b'diavad situation. It's not a chatchila. So I said, but I met her, I love her, I have her. Listen, if you love her, you should break up with her so she shouldn't have to worry about this her whole life. 30 years of productive life, she shouldn't have to worry about not becoming pregnant normally. That's a life. If you love her, you should break up with her. Baruch Hashem, I've been successful, not without taking abuse. Was one fellow, unbelievable, truth is stranger than fiction. So I believe he was engaged, and then they went to get tested, and they were both carrying Tay-Sachs, and they wanted to get married anyway, and I I wasn't the father's rebbe. I knew him, but his other rebbe said, it's not a good idea, and sent it to me. Said, don't break it up. Finally, I listened. Well, the father yelled at me and screamed at me. Then went out with another girl. This time he got a little bit smarter. He tested before the engagement. Once again, they're both carrying gay sex. Do you believe lightning struck twice?
Wow. Yeah.
I said, break it up. Finally, Baruch Hashem, the third time was a charm. They got married. I went to the wedding, and the father gave me a big hug and said, thank you very much. You have to be mevazim me to the... Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. I was at the bris. Thank God, you know. So, Rabbi have to know how to be, take it, you know. If you know you're doing the right thing, whatever they tell you, they just go right over. Right off. Don't bother you. Okay, right. All right. When should the wedding take place? Now, this only is going to work if you meet the chasam kala as soon as they get engaged. Very often they come to it, it's already passé, they already made the date. So you have to be careful with certain things. In 3 weeks, you can't get married. Sphera, the different spheres, you know how you count the sphera. Some count the first Tulag Boma, some count from Rosh Chodesh on. Different minhagim, usually the chasam's minhag should be the determinant. If someone don't get married at the end of the month, they're about quotes a minhag. That's not in our part of the world, but maybe, you never know what people want to have in mind. That's the when. The most important thing of the when is, should be early, not late. These 1 year engagements, what's this week's parasha again? Teshev ha'na'ar o'antan yon memo o'sar. Chassidim do it, to this day. Chassidim, but they don't see each other. They don't see each other for a year. I have Baba v'chassidish cousins, and that's what they do. They get engaged, and then he goes off to Eretz Yisrael, or wherever he goes, they don't set it for a year. Okay, it's not my style, but okay. But seeing each other for a year, that's tough. It's tough, but you're only human, Rabbi said. The answer is strong. Okay, where? Who cares where? Where? What's the difference? Oh, where? So there are some issues. What about a shul? Can you get married in a shul? So there are at least three reasons given not to get married in a shul. And Bavadi says, can't get married in a shul. Because it says in the Shulchan Aruch, he can't kiss somebody in the shul. And every wedding, everyone's hugging and kissing everybody else. Okay, that's reason number one. Nope. My Rebbe was against getting married in a shul. A shul? A shul is for tefillah and Torah, not for marriages. It's just not an appropriate activity, given to the basic necessities. Okay. Well, you know, my Rebbe was l'chatchila by him. He did many weddings and shuls. I was in attendance at some of them. So, okay. But the most strict perspective is it's a cherem. Why? Chukos ha-goyim. Because the goyim get married in church. Rav David Lifshitz, Zichron LeBracha, would not come to a chup in a shul. Period. He just wouldn't come. No matter how close the Talmud, he would not. He'd come afterwards. And I was at such a wedding. It was one of his closest Talmidim. We got married in a shul because the father was a rabbi in a shul, a very nice shul. He came late. Instead of the quote of the Chasam Sof, I don't know if that applies nowadays. I don't think that everyone keeps this in our circles. We have many weddings in shul, but they should be aware of the fact that there's some. Of course, the question is going to be, what if it's a non-Orthodox shul? Shul na mechitza. So from my rabbi's perspective, great. No kedusha beis haknesses. So you have no problem getting married there. It's kalkaloso takanoso. From the perspective of Rav David Zal, it's worse. This is mamish like it says. What a chukas agoyim. There were those who to this day will not go into a wedding in a conservative sanctuary. I was once at a wedding in the Sephardic temple. It's in five towns. And the guy walks up and says, where's the mechitza? And there is none. Oh, he ran out the door like he's running from a fire. The truth is, even setting foot in the conservative shul is not so simple. And my policy on this is it depends on the community. If the rabbis in the community are all doing it, I don't want to be holier than the Pope. I don't want to say, I'm the local rabbi, I'm not going to walk in. So I go in, and that includes five towns, it includes Teaneck, where they have these places in other shuls and other neighborhoods where the people don't go in. I don't go in. In the river, I don't go in. Where I live, I don't go to these places of worship. I think it's a problem. So obviously I wasn't at a wedding there. I wasn't ever there. So every community is a bit different. Fine. There was an Indian of the Ramah of getting married tachas kippas hashamayim, under the sky. Why under the sky? Because under the sky is a segula for many children. As we're reading down in Sefer Bereishis, kechoch v'hashamayim l'rov. And there are those who are very strict about this. And even if they're getting married indoors, they'll make sure to have a skylight that opens up. See them, don't go for this. Ah, it's garbage. They get married outdoors. Rain, snow, freezing, doesn't matter. It doesn't make one bit of difference. They're getting married outside no matter what. Boom. Okay. Well, many of us come from a different part of the world where that doesn't exist, and many people getting... Who in this room is married outside? It was in Roma?
Yeah.
Beautiful. It's nicer outside than inside. Who else is married outside? One person in the whole room. Okay, so a lot of people are married. Yeah?
I have a question.
Sure.
About the, if there's no mechitza,
yeah,
then it's better. Because
according to the Rav, it's better.
Better, but isn't the facade, isn't the building itself, it's a shul. So if there's no mechitza, there's not deemed. Like,
there's no kedushas based on knesses, in my opinion, if they're davening and exceeding. According to my Rebbe, to daven there is Yehorg Vayavar. That's what he wrote. Because the chukas agoyim. That's why. The bizrayt avodazar. He said it. It's printed in his name. If there's only one shul, no big seating on Rosh Hashanah, stay home. Don't hear shofar. You never heard of that. He was very strong on that. I don't think he had any kedusha in that room.
The heat is there, it's better.
If this now. Our distinction between mixed seating and no mechitza, these are the nuances.
And then if it's considered a shul, then it's not a shul because of mechitza.
Exactly, so it's not a shul. So according to my rabbi, it would be better, but according to Rav Dov, it would be worse. It's more like a church. Okay. Rabbos, let's go further. Okay, you have to set a date for a wedding. They come to you to set a date before the wedding. You have to make sure that she's not a nida. Chupas nida is horrific. I repeat, chupas nida is horrific. And today, a chupas nida is almost inexcusable. Almost inexcusable. Let me explain. In the olden days, they would set a date, and they would ask the woman, you know, when is going to be a good part of the month for you? Now, they set the date 3 months in advance, and especially the hormones often fly off the roof there before the wedding. They can either get, there's not that much of a margin. Either side, you can get into trouble. Then they started with pills. They're known as birth control pills. They just celebrated their 50th birthday not long ago. And that changed the whole world. That's called what they call the sexual revolution, which is a terrible thing. But it helped in certain ways. They could regulate the period, go on a 28-day pack. And most women aren't like clockwork. 28 days, you know exactly what's going to be. And you can prepare a wedding like that, no problem. Unfortunately, it's not so simple, because many women on the pill stain. Yeah, so as far as the goyish adakas are concerned, it's perfect. You know, that works great. Every 4 weeks, get a period. As far as the rabbanim are concerned, it's not so simple. As to have merchants early tshuvas about birth control pills, gewalt, it's going to be a nida. And here's the irony. It's reported, and I think there's some accuracy, that many women, after a while, they fall into a pattern, and they are, in fact, very regular, nothing in between. But the first few months, not. Now, you don't go on the pill until you get engaged. And you get engaged, if you have a proper engagement period, say 3 months, so you haven't even settled in yet, and there could be staining on the pill. And I've received phone calls, Rabosa, I can't tell you if it's on the pill, probably is, although for not. I've gotten phone calls day before the wedding, day of the wedding, the yichud room, after the wedding, the hotel room at 3:30 in the morning, you name it, I've gotten the phone calls. And I can tell you for a fact, this goes back so many years ago, when I still lived in Washington Heights, we actually made a shidduch. We're very close to the Chasam Kala. My wife is especially close with the Kala. And she gets a crying call, it's going to be a chupas nid. Now, as you probably aware a little bit, there's an Issur Yichud, and ish don't need the code and be a rishon. Everyone's aware of that? So in Ksubas, if you look Ksubas, you certainly know it. But people know this even without learning Ksubas. This is a well-known din. And so what happened was, so the young lady, the Kala, my wife and I drove home with the Chasam and the Kala. And she stayed at my house. And he stayed in the apartment, which was, you know, down the block. And for a few days, she held out. For a few days. After that, she was a basket case, crying and crying and crying. It's not easy. It's a very emotional time, very difficult. And nowadays, in my view, it's almost inexcusable to have chuppas nidah. Why so? There's a pill called Aegestin, Aygestin, which if taken in a proper dose, completely eliminates chuppas nidah. As a matter of fact, I'm a co-author of an article about this. I think it's on YU Torah. Is it on YU Torah? With two doctors. One is an endocrinologist, one is an OBGYN. We try to get it printed somewhere, no one would take it. The Torah journals wouldn't take it, not enough Torah. And the medical journals wouldn't take it, not enough medicine. Everybody needs it. So I think, put a YU Torah. So it's out there, you can look at it. If taken in proper dosage, some of the women go to doctors, they lower the dosage and they have problems. But the high dose can take for up to a month, you don't need it for more than that. The mile of this pill is, it's only a bidiabetic pill. In other words, if the people are nervous, oh, what's going to be nervous? They start going on pills, you know, they get their diamond ring and their pill, they start the same day. And then they go for 3 months or more, and then they end the last minute, it doesn't work. I've seen it too many times. This way, try to set a date which is going to work. If it works, it works. As you know, in life, the best pill is no pill. And if they set a date, and you know, things go normally, it's going to work. Yeah. You only know it's not going to work if you get towards the end. So Hasidim, I got my cousins, they will not send out the invitation until 3 weeks before the wedding. I just got an invitation now, this week, for weddings taking place in November. One of my Hasidish Bubba of a cousins. That's it. If things go wrong, they just change the date. That's all. But Baruch Hashem, things are going right, so I got the invitation. Good. So, in our world, we can't play with that. Just imagine. But if things are not working out right, get on this pill called Aegestin. Aegestin just stops you. Nothing happens. And then you take it until the wedding, and then you go off it. As another myla, birth control pills, number one, even if they work to avoid nida, when you get off them, often the body goes haywire, and there's big nida problems before you become regularized after the wedding. And number two, not for today's discussion, once a woman has a birth control pill, she says, let's keep it another, once I'm running on contraceptives, let's keep it, it's convenient, I want to have to go to college, I have to get a job. As you will see, I'm a very strong opponent of that idea of contraception upon marriage. And the final thing for today, I see I'm already out of time, I'm sorry, is that it's a Masada Kiddush's responsibility to see to it that the Chos and Kala have proper instruction in the Chos Nida. Chos and class, they call it Kala classes. You know, when I was getting married, these things didn't exist. We learned from the Svarim, and he picked up a little here and there. Now I think it's just about Dirigur. And the Dirigur, Chos and Kala classes, should not only be Tosca Chos Nida, but should also be discussing with every Chos and Kala how to be a husband, how to be a wife. You know, when I meet with a Chos and Kala, I'm reading from a bit of a syllabus that I have to discuss the Jewish wedding, the Torah wedding. But after I finish that, I talk about the Torah marriage. That's much more important, much more difficult. Torah marriage, or the Torah wedding takes 5 hours. Torah marriage is supposed to take at least 50 years. You know, hope they'll be married until 120 in peace. So I would like to make a pitch for something called the Shalom Workshops, which is sponsored by the Shalom Task Force. Unfortunately, they came into existence when husbands were beating their wives. It's a famous ad, it hurts to call, but it hurts more not to call. And I'm a member of that group that gets some of these phone calls. That's terrible, terrible. So they're trying to have a little bit of prevention. And they started these classes, which are very good. They teach basic skills, communication skills, how to be a mensch. Now, you know, if the person's not a mensch going into the marriage, there are going to be problems down with the marriage. I mean, I deal with many problems, and nearly everyone started long before the marriage. He or she, or very often both. And it's very tragic. Some of us can somehow get through, and some of us can't. Okay, there's so much more to say, but this is an introductory shiur, I guess. Anything you want me to talk about, please tell Rabbi Stein. I'll put on the syllabus mitzvah Hashem for the coming weeks. Okay. Dav Mincha, is that the deal?
Sure. Well, in terms of Mishnah, the only solution is